Welcome back, folks. We are joined now by Matt Wolf in for Michael Heck, VP of Communications of Greater New Orleans, Inc. Matt, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much. And I've told the rest of the office to be a little quiet, you know, with Michael gone. You know, things get a little crazy here. It's like when the parents are out of town. It's basically the same thing.
Absolutely. Well, I was going to say, don't tell me he's on another vacation, right?
Well, actually, you know, I'm going to say this. This is a huge accomplishment for anyone, but for him, his youngest son, Kai, is graduating from high school at the moment. So he's in Denmark.
That's awesome.
For that.
Yeah, absolutely. Congratulations to him for sure. So let's get into it. I know that there's a lot going on in the session. House Bill 687 seems to be making its way through the process relative to the Louisiana International Terminal. Tell us about it.
Yeah, well, you know, this bill really paved the way, no pun intended, for what is called the St. Bernard Transportation Corridor. That's the roadway that's going to support the terminal. You know, this is really kind of the piece of the puzzle that makes this work overall. You know, it's going to ensure that the freight is able to move in and out from the port without really impacting the areas around the port. You know, I know that's a major point of contention. You know, this road's really going to ensure that traffic kind of stays, you know, outside of the scope of normal traffic in St. Bernard Parish. You know, this is vital for economic growth in the region, and you know, kudos to the House that you know, passed, you know, the roadway forward. It was a 75-21 vote. It was a long debate on the floor, but you know, luckily, common sense prevailed, and looks like things are looking very positive for that. Obviously, there's still another step left. It does have to move from the Senate, but you know, we were one of 30 organizations from around the state that, you know, had penned support of this road, and hopefully, you know, this obstacle kind of becomes something of the past, and we can move into a brighter future together.
Matt, the opponents have been saying for a while now the road will never happen. They're not going to do the road. They're just promising that it's not going to happen. What are the opponents saying and testifying to in front of the committees and others about this particular legislation? It's the first step in assembling the land necessary to build the road.
Right. Well, I mean, to your point, there is a lot of chatter on both sides of this issue. So I don't want to pretend that there's a vacuum here. But, you know, in specifically in regards to what the opposition is saying out loud right now is that, you know, you've got people that are essentially, you know, questioning whether or not this is the best option, you know, overall, that, you know, maybe they should be looking at not just St. Bernard as an option. Obviously, Plaquemines Parish, you know, has a plan in place that is on the table, I guess you would say. I think that, you know, there's been some opposition basically saying that locals would lose control of the project, that communities should have a stronger oversight over these kinds of infrastructure projects, that you know, because they do get affected directly by them. I think there's also been a little bit of opposition in regards to, you know, again, you know, conditions of the port's new authority, you know, ensuring local guardrails would stay in place, which, you know, I think everyone should have the ability to voice thoughts like those. But ultimately, I think that the impact of this is large enough that the port has been able to put together a plan that is feasible, that is achievable, and ultimately will allow commerce to grow significantly.
Yeah, I had Parish President Louis Pomez on the other day, and, you know, obviously there's been folks that have put together a recall effort because he, I think, I don't know if he testified in favor of this particular legislation or not. He has said all along that the infrastructure in St. Bernard is not capable of handling the weight load that would be present as a result of the terminal, a legitimate concern. But that's what the road was always all about, right? To take this traffic off of the local roads and to put it on a designated space that's designed for such traffic. This is not unique. Almost every container terminal around the country has done something very similar, right?
Absolutely. And, you know, first of all, it's a win-win to have a road, just as much as it is important for local residents to not feel that pressure. It's also critically important for the goods to be able to move in and out of commerce without also equally being interrupted by regular traffic flow. The fact that we've been able to pull it off with such great success in the city of New Orleans proper, I mean, when you think about it, that's smack dab in the middle of a lot of traffic here in the city, and yet they're able to pull it off somewhat successfully. Having this alternate option is just going to make things even better. So, in terms of a weight capacity, I can tell you that I know that the port wants to ensure that this is a project that is successful, and I know that they're not going to cut any corners in terms of construction.
One of the things that confuses me is, when they talk about control and everything else is, you have a defined piece of geography. You have a defined activity. Expansion falls totally within the purview of the local authorities there. What is it that they fear?
Well, I think that what's being communicated in St. Bernard Parish is a feeling that extends far beyond just one community. I think that there's a general distrust in what we might call the establishment, and that I think that people feel as though decisions are being made for them instead of with them. And so, this is something that we're seeing across the board. We're watching it as, broadband internet's trying to be brought around the country in rural areas. You name the issue, it's, I think people want to feel as though they have a voice and control over where they live. So I completely understand where that stems from. But to your point, I think that there are certain things that are inherently being considered in projects of this size and scale that, by nature, ensure that bad things won't happen to a community. So I think that when you're not part of the decision-making process, you can feel as though someone is taking your voice. And so I completely understand where that viewpoint is one that can be felt.
Well, I mean, there have been the opportunity to voice opposition or being, in favor of it. There's been a lot of misinformation out there talked about. It's just not for you to answer, but I've always been very curious as to what is the economic development strategy of the parish moving forward. It was a much bigger parish. It requires for the viability of our entire metropolitan region to get back to numbers that they were previous to Katrina. I think they're about a third off, if maybe even more than that. And the reality is that I don't know that I see it on the forefront. I've been criticized for having said that, but I mean, I just believe it to be an unpleasant truth. I mean, there are a lot of unpleasant truths out there. I mean, you're in the economic development world every day, clawing and scratching for folks to come down here. When you think about a project this size, they're few and far between.
Absolutely. These types of investments aren't made in very many communities, and when you think of the laws of growth or stagnation, you're either doing things to move yourself forward as a community, or you're stuck in paralysis. And this is a good thing to have in a community that people want to invest something real and tangible into, something that moves our entire state forward in a direction that we've been passed up in for decades now. And I don't know how many other opportunities that are this big and this transformational will come really anyone's way, but specifically St. Bernard's way. These are few and far between. So it's a it's definitely one not worth passing up.
Yeah, I mean, when you think about the tax base that'll be increased, I mean, estimated to be around $53 million in new tax revenue for St. Bernard. I mean, if you were to try to figure out what kind of project would generate that kind of money,
I'd fall short trying to name it.
Yeah, I mean, and the impact to the community is going to be far greater. I mean, I'm being criticized for that observation as well, but I mean, it is an unpleasant truth because there are not a lot of support services that are going to need to totally exist that are critical as it relates to this particular project. So they're not like draining existing resources where a lot of other types of economic development, as you well know, do. And, you know, and you have to increase all kinds of different things. So it's just it's interesting to me that folks are taking a breath and kind of just connecting some of the dots here as to this, because some of the highest priced property in the city of New Orleans is a baseball throw away from a container facility. Right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, it's why we were founded as a city to begin with, is because of import-export activity. So, yeah.
So I know insurance reform has been top of mind for a lot of folks. Most of the bills are moving through, without opposition.
Yes, absolutely. So, you know, there was one really in the past week that stands out. It was a House bill that was it was looking to shift the state from what's called a pure comparative fault system to a modified comparative fault system. You know, it basically essentially the proposed system means that you can't recover any damages if you're more than 50% at fault for an accident. 30 other states use this system. It's obviously not the one that we use today. It has cleared a Senate Judiciary Committee. It's going to the Senate floor here soon. You know, this is just one of those kind of common sense things when you kind of hear it, you know, described out loud. You go, wait a minute, why were we doing it this other way? I don't know that there were bad intentions at play here. I think, you know, sometimes just the pieces fall into place in a way that, you know, maybe doesn't make sense when years go by. But, you know, kudos to the team for pushing that forward. I know Michael testified in support of this change. So, you know, hopefully we have some good news coming in soon on that bill.
Yeah. On the energy front, House Bill 615 by Gaiman is making its way through the process as well.
Yeah, well, it was actually defeated on the House floor, which is good. So what was essentially being proposed
here? I'm sorry, I'm thinking about another bill. You're right. Okay, go ahead. I'm sorry.
You're okay. Look, there are a lot of them, so this won't be the last one. It's a little bit confusing, but you know, really, this was a bill that built in some pretty stiff regulatory frameworks around solar developments around the state. You know, this is a move that you know, we've seen happen in other places around the country where you have parties who really are fighting it for one of a handful of reasons. It may be that, you know, they're, you know, don't really want to embrace renewable energy. It may be that, you know, they want to use the land for something else themselves. It could be, you know, even resistant to just any kind of outside developers. You know, and the way that you kind of fight that is you slow or complicate the pace of change. You know, luckily, you know, once again, common sense prevailed. We're able to, you know, make sure that people understood that, you know, first of all, you know, solar development is not, you know, extremely intrusive. We have a large amount of undeveloped land in this state. You know, that's part of what has made this such an appealing place for projects like that Meta project in North Louisiana. You know, a lot of these projects build in provisions to make sure that, you know, they're not widely viewed from roadways, so that, you know, they'll build in hedges and things along those lines because they do kind of want to keep, you know, somewhat natural aesthetics. And so now this is a way for us to move forward, and you know, hopefully, you know, this is an industry that can really take off in Louisiana. Obviously, around the country, solar is kind of in a little bit of a boom. The efficiencies have been built into that technology. technology are pretty significant. And, you know, I don't really know a much more powerful energy source than the sun itself. We know that we feel it here in July. It definitely works.
Yeah. It's in keeping with your all of the above strategy as it relates to energy. And a new study from, Louisiana Mid-Continent Oil and Gas Association that was performed by the ULL economist Stephen Barnes has revealed some new numbers of the impact. Tell us about those.
Yeah, well, you know, I think anecdotally we all knew how significant the energy of a role the energy industry plays in our state's economy. But yes, this new study that Limoga commissioned spells it out pretty clearly. You know, the energy industry generates around 25% of the state's economy. It's around $78 billion annually. I mean, I can't wait to see what that number starts to look like here in the next few years based on what you're just saying with the all the above energy strategy and announcements like we had last week with New Lab. I mean, we're going to have really, these numbers are going to be even greater in years to come. But also just, you know, it put some numbers around the jobs themselves. You know, 300,000 energy jobs, or over 300,000. It's about 15% of the state's total employment. I mean, that's a pretty big deal. And then, of course, what we're able to benefit on the back end of it. You know, we've got around $26 billion in statewide earnings. That's a lot of money in Louisiana wallets that's being generated. 19% of all earnings, actually, to be specific. And then, of course, you know, we've got local property taxes that are being paid as a result of it, about around $1.1 billion. And then state taxes around $3.5 billion. So overall, you know, we're looking at, you know, this is an industry that, you know, between employment, total economy, tax impact, et cetera, this is a force that can't be reckoned with. And again, to know that we're in a position to make it even stronger for years to come, wow, I'd definitely be hedging my bets on the energy industry right now.
Yeah. Matt, let's pivot to a topic that, because we got so many to talk about, not enough time. Yeah. But I wanted to touch on what's going on in the airline industry right now, relative to the FAA, the problems that they're having. Major airports across the country continue to reveal the underbelly of the lack of technology moving forward. Do you get the sense that we know the full impact of this yet? It seems as though it's coming at us in bits and pieces, and we're really not sure how big of an issue this may be.
Yeah, look, this is something that you know, we're patiently waiting to learn more. You know, just the same way that you just kind of described it. You know, I think that what we probably at least domestically and probably internationally have kind of taken for granted is the incredible amount of complexity that goes into running air travel. I mean, the sheer numbers that fly each day, both in terms of passenger count and in terms of aircraft that take off and land on a given day, it's pretty astonishing when you sit there and think about it. And so, you know, it's not surprising to know that really small wrinkles can really have such a tremendous impact. Not only does it impact, you know, what are the very obvious things, which are the airport operations and, you know, tourism trips that are impacted by it. But think about the business that's being impacted. You know, you've got, you know, significant meetings that now leaders maybe aren't making their way into. You've got conferences that may be part of, you know, the people who are supposed to be on hand or even speaking on stage are being impacted. So, you know, the trickle down is pretty massive. And I don't even know if we're in a position to even measure it correctly yet.
Yeah. And in spite of that, our own airport continues to rack up awards, which is, you know, incredible when you think about it, you know, because of, you know, all the other challenges that are good, because they're working on the same technology, right?
They are. But, you know, kudos to them. I mean, what a total turnaround that facility has undertaken, both visually but also operationally. I know a lot of the on-time stats are phenomenal, but the latest one that they got is from Uber, which is they received the 2024 Quickest Pickup Award. You know, the numbers show that there's around a four-minute wait from when a rider requests a ride and a pickup, and that's a pretty swift number, especially when you know that some of those people are making their order before they even leave the terminal. So that means that their wait is pretty swift getting them here downtown and beyond.
There's little or nothing that happens in 4 minutes at an airport, so that's pretty phenomenal, quite frankly.
I think that there's almost nothing that can happen that quickly.
Yeah, exactly. All right, you got to get to a break. We're visiting with Matt Wolf, VP of Communications at Greater New Orleans, Inc., and we'll be back with a special guest, Jerry Bologna, President and CEO of JETCO. Stay with us. Welcome back, folks. We are joined by Matt Wolf. Continue to speak with Matt, VP of Communications at Greater New Orleans, Inc., and Jerry Bologna, President and CEO of JETCO. Jerry, welcome to the show.
Great to be on.
So, Jerry, you guys have embarked upon a new initiative called JP Passport. Tell us about it.
Well, Newell, we've been on the show a couple of times here recently talking about some great things happening in Jefferson, lots of ribbon cuttings and groundbreakings, but all this year we're celebrating Jefferson Parish's bicentennial. So in conjunction with Visit Jefferson Parish, even Matt over at GNO Inc. was part of this. We formed a business committee, and one of the things coming out of that was this parish passport, which is really a way for our businesses to engage in the celebration all year long. So our residents in Jefferson and around Jefferson can go on to JETCO.org/JP200 and download the passport. It's mobile friendly, and visit area retailers all throughout Jefferson who are offering discounts. And these include restaurants and jewelry stores and airboat tours, all sorts of discounts throughout the parish. And we want more businesses to sign up so that more residents can enjoy the things that we enjoy throughout Jefferson.
And if folks are interested in taking advantage of JP Passport, how do they go about purchasing same?
It's no cost to anyone, but they can go to our website, JETCO.org/JP200, and there they can download the passport. And our businesses or additional businesses that want to take advantage of the passport, they can also go to our website, JETCO.org/JP200, to sign up their business.
So it's free, and you get discounts. Why wouldn't you go to that website, right?
It's a win-win, and you know, in addition to just enjoying the discounts, the users can check in at various businesses, encourage them to engage, and you get so many points for each time you visit one of those businesses, and then there'll be raffles and prizes throughout the year. In fact, first week of June, we'll be picking our first winner, which will receive some tickets to the parish's bicentennial ball, which is going to be on June 14th.
Yeah, that looks like I got an invitation the other day to that. Looks like it's going to be a great event and a number of people involved in it out at Lakeside Shopping Center to celebrate the bicentennial, and that's linked to the JP Passport as well, right?
Yeah, the bicentennial is being held at Lakeside Mall. That's sort of a non-traditional venue. Nobody else gets to enjoy that venue in that setting, but there'll be stages set up throughout the mall, bands playing, including national acts, and it's going to be another exciting way we celebrate the bicentennial.
Yeah, and the proceeds of that go to
the Jefferson Community Foundation.
And the Jefferson, if you would, for the benefit of the listening audience, describe what they do.
Well, that is our community foundation in Jefferson Parish, and they raise through philanthropic means funds, and they are a funder of a number of important projects throughout Jefferson Parish that deal with education and literacy and all sorts of different means.
Yeah. On this continuing with this economic development, some exciting new offerings opening up in Jefferson Parish. Tell us about those.
Yeah, so, you know, last week we were celebrating that Gulf Coast Bank grand opening. This week at NOLA Motorsports, they officially opened the doors for their new offering, which is called Throttle and Swing. This is a new, really upscale mini golf concept, full course out there, but that goes in conjunction with their karting experience. So that's a great way for folks to have some fun this summer. Over in Kenner, we're celebrating the grand opening of Flying Dollies, ice cream and snowballs. So just more things keep opening in Jefferson, and we celebrate every one of them, small or large.
Interesting about what's gone on out by Throttle and Swing. That's really become a whole entertainment destination complex unto itself, right?
So that's really adjacent to our Churchill Park, and since we've been there, you not only have the TPC course, you have the NOLA Motorsports, and then nearing the completion of construction is the John Ilario Sports Complex, which is going to be a great attraction for travel, baseball and softball and various sports that are going to drive a lot of traffic to that area. So that is really an entire sports destination. You also have the Ilario Center right out there. So a lot happening and a lot continuing to happen in that area.
Yeah. The Flying Dollies ice cream, that was something that Jedco actually participated in by providing financing for a lot of small businesses. Jerry, I don't think they recognize that you guys offer guidance and assistance in that regard.
Yeah, we're fairly unique in that, in terms of economic development organizations like ours. Not many of them have financing capacity, but we do. And we have a number of means through SBA loans, revolving loan funds that we control. But through those funds, we're able to fund a lot of startup businesses and entrepreneurial ideas. And we do that all day, every day. Lots of small businesses have gotten their start as a result of Jedco's financing. And Flying Dollies is just one example of that, a small business that wouldn't have started were it not for our ability to finance the business.
Jerry, a little bit about state of the state. The other day, I was reading an article. Everybody was concerned about whether the additional stipend the stipend from the state was going to happen for the teachers. The local school board decided to put forward their own stipend in addition to that. And they reflected or they commented on the additional sales tax collections that had occurred in Jefferson Parish, which were greater than what they had anticipated or expected. And you don't hear that often. It's a good thing.
It is a good thing. I know last month when we received the collections that reflected Super Bowl, we had a large uptick over the previous year. This month, we just got the numbers, I believe, yesterday, and I haven't taken a full look at them, but I know we're up over the same month last year again. So retail continues to be strong in Jefferson Parish, and we're so reliant on sales tax that is a very good barometer of our success. Is sales tax increases, it means our parish is doing well.
Yeah. You know, and Matt, I don't know if you want to opine on that. I don't know exactly what we're seeing as it relates to the city. Do you guys monitor that?
Not currently at the moment, but I mean, you know, that's something that we should probably be keeping a closer look at.
Yeah. I know that, you know, as the former tax collector, we used to send all of these agencies that sales tax report every month. And I guess, Jerry, you would say you find it helpful, right?
Oh, absolutely. It's a great indicator of how things are going, but it also helps us to formulate our strategic plan going forward, where we need to pay attention to, because those reports even break it down by taxing districts throughout the parish. So we know how various areas of the parish are performing as well. It's a great tool for us.
Yeah, so you can monitor Elmwood, you can monitor Avondale. I mean, each one of those, we can't get down to the granular retail outlet level because that's proprietary information. But when you look at regionally what something is doing, it gives you the opportunity to kind of look and see if it's both on the upside or on the decline, you know, begin to ask questions as to what's going on.
It's incredibly useful tool from that standpoint. We know what areas of the parish are performing well, where we need to pay special attention to, and that really helps guide our strategic plan.
So got a number of texts here wanting to know how to get that JP passport. You go to JEDCO, JEDCO.org/JP200, and you can sign up for that JP passport there for sure. Final thoughts, Jerry?
No, but thank you for having us on and telling the good news. We want all businesses to participate in that passport, sign up, and we want all of our residents to get out and support those businesses.
Thank you so much for joining us today. We will be right back after the break with Matt Wolf's final thoughts. Stay with us. Welcome back, folks. We're visiting with Matt Wolf, VP of Communications, Greater New Orleans, Inc. Matt, we're about to embark on hurricane season. I almost hate to say that word. It's a couple of weeks away. Entergy doing a lot of work in the city. Tell us about it.
Yeah, well, they've already started work on what is really a $100 million project that's meant to really reinforce the local power grid. As you mentioned, it's just in advance of hurricane season. They've already started work near Little Woods in New Orleans East. That is the first of what will be 63 projects that are going to take around 2 years to deploy. What they're really trying to attack are a handful of areas where aging infrastructure has you know, unfortunately dominated what the grid looks like there, and they're just hardening it to make sure that you know, in the event that we have a storm hit here, that we can get things back on and lit up pretty quickly. They are going to be doing work around the entire city, and you know, in addition to what they've already identified, they're going to be embarking on quite a few inspections around 3,100 structures in the city.
Yeah, I mean, I was reading about this, and when you think about 3,100 structures being touched, that's huge.
Yeah, I mean, as an organization that just clearly had to pay a lot of attention to infrastructure ahead of the Super Bowl, I deeply understand how that is a significant number of places to be in charge of. I can't even imagine driving to 3,100 places, much less performing any kind of work at 3,100 places. So, you know, hats off to them. That's a job that I'm not envious of in any way, shape, or form.
Yeah. Matt, any other news that you'd like to talk about? Kind of wrap things up today?
Yeah. So, you know, I'd love to talk just a little bit about an event that took place this past weekend in partnership with TechStars, which is a national entrepreneurship organization. We co-hosted an event called TechStars Startup Weekend. We had around 24 individuals that attended the event. There were five teams. And essentially what this event was from Friday to Sunday, each of the teams essentially built a company in a weekend. So you take everything from concept to kind of, you know, early stages of a product. You start to talk through what rollout looks like. You start going through what a customer experience could look like. This was such an important event. Seven people flew in from other cities, like Chicago, L.A., Houston, Seattle, Atlanta, because they wanted to be able to have that experience of quickly, you know, building a company, but also what you gain from it from a network. I know in previous similar events, you know, relationships that have lasted decades have been formed. So that was a very exciting project to be involved in. Salem Hopti from our team led that on behalf of our Startup Noir NOLA initiative, and you know, a lot of the projects that came out of that were based on problems with strong ties to Louisiana. You know, this is this was an opportunity for the participants who had experience founding their own companies to kind of create something of their own that had some Louisiana focus. So it was a really good event.
Absolutely. I love those events, right? I mean, it's just the amount of innovation that goes on, the whole thought process. It's just exciting to see those things happening in our city. And congratulations to you guys for the success of SAME. Matt, thank you so much for joining us, standing in for the Michael Heck, and enjoy his time away.
Absolutely. We'll try, but he'll be back next week, I promise.
Matt Wolf, VP of Communications at Greater New Orleans, Inc. Have a great weekend, Matt.
You too. Take care, Newell. Bye-bye.
We'll be right back, folks. Stay with us. Folks, when we come back after the top of the hour news break, we will visit with Joe Geruso, New Orleans City Council member, District A, who's also a member of the Criminal Justice Committee. They had a meeting yesterday. And in the back half, we'll visit with Colonel Jeff McCausland,